Matthew 15, this is another chapter in the sermon in the series I've been preaching since the beginning of the year called Red Print. We're looking at the words of Jesus and who he said them to, and we're trying to discover what those words might be saying to us today. When I was a high school sophomore, I had my first regular paying job. Every weekday afternoon for that year, when my classes were over, I would walk 5 or 6 blocks west to Sunshine Dairies, where my dad worked. Dad's job was to make large vats of cottage cheese, and which he would later ladle into cottage cheese cartons to be sold all around the county and beyond. Dad got me a job at the dairy, but it wasn't working along with him. My job at first was keeping the floor of the bottling room clean. Now, the bottling room, we didn't have milk bottles by that time, but they called it the bottling room because that's where they had put milk into bottles before. Now we had 2 gigantic machines called Pure Pack machines, which put milk into cartons, the cartons we have today. And so my job was to keep the floor clean so that if the dairy inspector came around, that he would look and he wouldn't see cigarette butts on the floor. So my job was keeping the floor clean and also washing the parts of the 2 machines that 2 Pure Pack machines and the parts of the cream separator. Now, the separator was really hard to wash because it had lots and lots of conical stainless steel things, which for some reason were called discs. I grew to dislike those discs immensely. Now, this was not your standard farm cream separator. They had small discs. These discs were like that big around, and they were conical in shape. But each of those discs was covered with a thick layer of cream, almost like rubber. You had to take that disc, peel off that layer of hardened cream, and after that you had to make sure that each of those discs was as clean as the day when it was first delivered to the dairy. Now, washing the other machine parts wasn't as hard as those separator parts. In fact, I actually got to enjoy it. First, you had to... Now, those parts from the Pure Pack machines, they were moving parts, and so they put a kind of a lubricant on them called petrol gel. Petrol gel. They still make that. I looked it up online. It's kind of like Vaseline. You just kind of squeeze it on there and put it into the machine, and then it goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But then you have to wash that because there might be some bacteria on those parts. So I would get all the parts, and I'd take them back. First, you have to get all the petrol gel off. You turn on the steam hose. You had a hose, and then fed into it was pure steam and cold water. So you turned on, normally you turned on the water first, then let the steam into it, but this time you turned on the steam, and you backed off from that machine part, and you let that machine part have it with full blast of white steam. And when you got done with that, not only was all the petrol gel off of it, there wasn't a microbe or a bacteria for 50 yards. But then you still had to put that part into the sink and wash it with Dieton A, a pink powder. I can still smell Dieton A if I think about it, that pink powder. The dairy worked out for me that I homeschooled my remaining high school classes, worked full-time at the dairy from 6:30 in the morning until whatever time in the evening all the milk was finally into the cartons. So I was reading Matthew 15 this week. I thought back to my work at the dairy, and the part that made me think of it was the part where we talked about washing your hands. Jesus talks about, or the Pharisees talked about washing your hands. One thing the dairy taught me was how to wash dishes. There were no actual dishes at the dairy, just those machine parts, but I learned very clearly the philosophy of washing things that came in contact with food items and how to get them absolutely clean. You made sure that the water was as hot as possible, and when you scrubbed away on that part, you scrubbed vigorously. We had these heavy black rubber gloves to do this so we wouldn't get our hands hurt. The reason Matthew 15 reminded me about the dairy was that the part of the chapter talks about washing your hands, as I mentioned. But it also talks about how far away our hearts can drift from the God who loves us. Now, in this chapter, there are some important questions. We'll look at just one or two this morning. Let's start with the first one, Matthew 15, starting with verse 1. Then the scribes and Pharisees who were from Jerusalem came to Jesus saying, "Why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat bread." Now, as an experienced dairy worker, I can nod my head in agreement. You have to maintain good personal hygiene in order to stay healthy, especially where food is concerned. But if you know anything about this story, you'll remember that it really doesn't have anything to do with getting a bar of soap and some hot water and scrubbing your hands well, even under your fingernails. If you're reading this from the Andrew Study Bible, you'll find an excellent footnote right there at the bottom of the page and going on to the next page. I won't read the whole thing, but here's just part of it. Quote, "After the Babylonian exile, the Jews, in an attempt to keep the Torah perfectly, the law perfectly, so that the exile experience would not be repeated, began developing meticulous rules and regulations that were explanations of the 613 laws found in the books of Moses. These were handed down orally from generation to generation until about AD 200, when they were put into writing in a book called the Mishnah, about 2 inches thick. The question of the scribes and Pharisees as to why Jesus' disciples did not wash their hands was not a question of inquiry into their personal hygiene. Rather, it was about ritual and ceremonial purity. The purpose of hand washing was to remove the defilement that was brought on the pious Jew by contact with ceremonially unclean persons or things." End of quote. At home, I actually have a copy of the Mishnah, which has a whole section on how to make sure your hands are ceremonially clean. There was no mention of soap or hot water. Instead, you took a certain amount of room temperature water, regular water, and poured it onto your hand and let it run down your wrist. You did that twice, and then you were now ceremonially clean from any defilement a Samaritan or a Gentile would have put on that food object or that dish or whatever by touching it. So those Pharisees must have kept watching the disciples with eagle eyes to see if they were breaking any of the man-made rabbinic traditions. And sure enough, these disciples were not going through the hand-washing ritual. So the Pharisees asked their question. And let's watch how Jesus responds. Let's pick it up at verse 2. The Pharisees speak first. "Why do your disciples transgress the traditions of the elders?" And now remember, these elders, that long string of rabbis who'd been doing their absolute best to make sure that the Jewish nation didn't come within 500 yards of breaking any of God's laws, these elders had painstakingly worked out some specific hand-washing rules. Why weren't the disciples following them? Now, here's what's so unsettling about what's happening here. You see, when the Pharisees accused Jesus' disciples of doing what they did, they were using the rabbinic elders as their source of authority. They were totally skipping anything the Bible might have had to say about it itself. The Bible didn't say anything about it. The Bible did say that priests should wash before they go into the temple. But everything else was just a spin-off of that. And in addition, the Pharisees in this scene with Jesus were not humbly trying to guide fellow believers toward greater truth. Instead, they were trying to gather evidence against Jesus, which they could eventually use at a trial if it came to that. Okay, what does all this have to do with me? I think that you and I need to be very careful to make sure that we are not allowing other idea sources to take the place of the Bible. Some people like to go back to the early church fathers, such as Ignatius and Augustine and Martin Luther and John Calvin, and spend a lot of time burrowing through those authors' writings. I knew a fellow student at seminary who got his master's degree in some aspect of Martin Luther, and to hear him tell it, gospel learning stopped right there. Anybody later than Martin Luther was not worth that much to him. This man I'm talking about eventually left the Adventist church and began to pastor in another denomination. And these days, there are many wonderful Christian authors producing material, such as devotionals, Bible study series, blogs, and so on. And the temptation is to turn our attention away from Bible print. and use ideas from our current spiritual heroes and heroines without going directly back to the Bible itself. But now let Jesus have something to say about this. How does he answer the Pharisees' question? What will his red print have to say to us, picking it up at verse 2? The Pharisees say, "Why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat bread." He answered and said to them, "Why do you also transgress the commandment of God? Because of your tradition." You see what's happening? In his answer to the Pharisees, Jesus asked them a couple of questions which turned the tables. They have ignored the Bible in favor of the rabbis' man-made rules, and he is showing that in this case, they are actually teaching people to disobey God's command. Watch how he explains this, verse 4. "For God commanded, saying, 'Honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father and mother, let him be put to death.' But you say, 'Whoever says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me is a gift to God, then he need not honor his father or mother.' Thus you have made the tradition, the commandment of God, of no effect by your tradition. Hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, 'These people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me.'" So here we see, standing there in front of Jesus and staring at him, are a group of supposedly religious people with faraway hearts. And talking about faraway hearts, think of a greedy, callous person in those days who was deciding what to do with his money. There was no social security in those days, no pensions, which meant that mom and dad were totally dependent on their children for support. You had as many kids as you possibly could so that you have the best chance of everybody being supported properly in your old age. But here is some utterly callous son who knows that he needs to support his parents, but who has discovered this crafty little loophole in the rabbinic law, which implies that rather than support your parents, you can dedicate the money in the future to the temple, and you can use it now for your own purposes, and thus leave your parents to barely scrape by. It's a terrible thing to be so greedy that you ignore your parents' needs, but it's even more horrible to do this and claim that God allows it. Just think how badly this must have damaged God's reputation in the eyes of the people who thought this blood-curdling cruelty was all right with him. Let's stay tuned here, because now Jesus is going to make this very practical and personal to anybody who reads this, not only people who are acquainted with rabbinic laws, but people all the way down through the centuries to you and me right here. Watch what he says, verse 10. "When he had called the multitude to him," now he's no longer talking only to the scribes and Pharisees. "When he called the multitude to him, he said to them, 'Hear and understand, not what goes into the mouth defiles a man, but what comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man.'" Jesus is, of course, talking about spiritual defilement, not physical defilement. There are a lot of things which can be put into the mouth that physically defile us. Unsanitary dairy products can do this. If your milk carton begins to swell, take a little sniff and you realize, no, you should not drink that. Pigs love it. My dad raised pigs when I was young. They'd bring home milk from the dairy in cartons that were bulging. And what we do is you could take the half-gallon carton and you just sort of broke it over the edge of the trough, and it was so swollen that it would just splat out into the trough. Pigs loved it. And they were glossy, sleek pigs Dad raised there. But this was not something that you drank yourself. Unsanitary dairy products can defile you physically. Parents are always chasing after their kids, making sure they don't put certain things into their mouths. Ever since the Industrial Revolution made it possible to process the health out of flour and made it possible to inject large quantities of sugar into lots of things, the list of physically defiling foods has grown. And even people who don't think much or care much about God are figuring this out and are eating in more healthy ways these days. But that's not what Jesus is talking about here. He makes this clear a few verses later when his disciples ask him to explain it to them. Chapter 15, verse 7, he says to his disciples, Do you not yet understand that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and is eliminated? But those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile a man, for out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile a man. So what's truly spiritually defiling is when what comes out of the heart, then out of the mouth. That's what's truly spiritually defiling. We all have faraway hearts. How does a faraway heart happen? I think the classic case is those ancient rabbis who were the spiritual leaders of the Jewish nation just after they returned from Babylon. God would have preferred that they humble their hearts and pray that he would renew their hearts. Because the idea of heart renewal was not a New Testament idea. Way back in Deuteronomy 5, after Moses had challenged the Israelites to serve the Lord, and Israel had promised to do this, God said wistfully to Moses in Deuteronomy 5, starting with verse 28, he says, quote, "I have heard the voice of the words of this people, which they have spoken to you. They are right in all that they've spoken. Oh, that they had such a heart in them, that they would fear me always and keep my commandments, that it might be well with them and with their children forever." The word heart shows up in Deuteronomy alone more than 40 times, more than once per chapter. Any reader of the Old Testament, including the Pharisees and scribes standing in front of Jesus, would have known this. They would have known David's Psalm 51 prayer, "Create in me a clean heart, O God." They would have known Jeremiah 31:33, where God says, "But this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, says the Lord, I will put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts, and I will be to them, be their God, and they shall be my people." Last night, as I was putting the final touches on this sermon, I pulled out my copy of the Mishnah, 2-inch thick book, hardcover, and I just started to read it from the part where it talks about how to ceremonially clean your hands. I read several pages. Not once did I ever read anything about humbly turning your heart to God. Instead, I read how Rabbi Hillel said one thing about a certain issue, but Rabbi Jochanan ben Zakkai said something else. On and on these stories went, and there were some good parts. Some of the rabbis spoke in ways that showed mercy to the people involved in the issues they were discussing. All of them seemed to be trying to do their best. But as Jesus gazed into the eyes of those Pharisees and gazed through them back to those traditions, those commandments of men, he must have been deeply grieved at how those ancient, hard-working scholars pretty much missed the point. After all, as a prairie farm kid, I would play outside in the summer until there wasn't any more light to play in. My brother and I would play catch with an old baseball, and the darker it got, the harder it would be to find that ball, and finally it just got lost in the weeds, and we couldn't find it. And then when we walked through the deep twilight toward the golden light coming from our farmhouse, we knew there were good things to eat inside. We would come in the door, Mama tell us to wash our hands, and we'd go to the sink. Sometimes we would wash too quickly and we wouldn't get our hands clean. Mom would tell us to wash them again. But we knew something about our mom that perhaps many of those rule-writing rabbis didn't know about God. We knew that Mom loved us with dirty hands as much as she loved us with clean hands. Washing our hands correctly was not the way to earn Mom's love. Mom loved us already, more than we ever could know, and she wanted us to stay healthy. We never had to go up in our rooms or felt that we had to go up in our rooms with little notebooks and spend half the night trying to figure out rules for hand washing and sub-rules under those main rules and exceptions to the rules. We never had to argue about those rules and finally write in our notebooks that Rabbi Malan's opinion was this and Rabbi Chester's opinion was slightly different. No, Mom loved us. If she had come upstairs and seen us writing rabbinic rules in our notebooks, she would have been extremely puzzled. "What are you doing that for?" she would have asked. That's what God is like. We can't talk with him face to face right now, but We can read his letters to us. The Bible is a complicated book, but only because we are complicated people. We have made life very difficult for God, and he used a great deal of patience in meeting us where we are and then inviting us closer to him. But he has been with us this morning through the red print words of his son Jesus. He's been lovingly reminding us of our faraway hearts and has been longing for us to open those hearts to him. Through everything his son has ever said in the four Gospels, God has been saying to us, relax, it's simple, I'm your parent, I love you, and I want to be close to you forever. I created your heart and know exactly what is inside it, and I stand at its door and knock. And if you open to me and let me come in, I will change your heart for the better. Like the song we sang for the worship team, change my heart, O God, make it ever new. I will change your heart for the better and make it more like mine. Would you like me to do that? He asked. Well, how about you? Would you like him to do that? Why don't you let him see your upraised hand if that's your desire? Change your heart this week.